Greetings, everyone. I just in the breakout room, I met three people I hadn't spoken to before, so that was lovely. So there are people out there in the cloud and in the dirt also I haven't met, so I'm just going to introduce myself briefly in the interest of that. So my name's Ellen T, and I live just outside of Philadelphia. I have two sons who are 18 and 19, and I own a bookstore here in my little town of Narberth. And I have a little RV with my partner, Kevin, and we travel around. So sometimes you see me sitting in that, and sometimes you see me sitting here. And I've been a member of Brightway since, well, I started attending in 2020 and joined the board last year. So all is well. Very happy to be here. And taking on this precept, which, you know, I just consider kind of all encompassing. And it does stretch my brain in interesting ways, because I feel like, you know, once you think about vow, and if you can identify a moment in time when you perhaps came close to not living by thou specifically or generally, then you go into a loop maybe of dwelling on past mistakes. And you know, that's big or small. It's very, there's sort of a meta, as in M-E-T-A, not M-E-T-T-A. There's sort of a thinking about thinking cycle in this, and I'll explain more of what I mean about that. But I'll read the description of the precept as it appears for us, which you can find on the website as you've been studying the precepts in this series. So it reads as follows. Do not dwell on past mistakes. Create wisdom from ignorance. In the realm of the flawless Dharma, not expounding upon error is the precept of not dwelling on past mistakes. In the Buddha Dharma, there is one path, one Dharma, one realization, one practice. Do not engage in fault finding. Do not condone haphazard talk. So the headline there is, do not dwell on past mistakes, create wisdom from ignorance. And there's a lot there. And I think it really does merge with the next precept next week, which I think is Dennis's talk about not praising self or blaming others. You know, with this one, we're talking about, there's room for interpretation, I'm sure, but we're really talking about our own mistakes. That's probably primary for us when we think about the idea of past mistakes. But also, maybe we're fixated on grievances with others, something that you perceive as a past mistake of someone that you know. And I guess that really depends on your, or on our own spiritual state at any given moment. And also, you know, I really noticed the way that the precepts are phrased differently by different teachers, different lineages, schools, Zen centers. But we're no matter what, we're closely circling ideas surrounding morality and ethics. These are the precepts. And maybe the lens through which we view our own thoughts, speech, actions, versus how we view others, those lenses might be different, and that might change over time too. So are we harder on ourselves, on our past actions and moments when we are perhaps less skillful than others? This is the question that I want to put out that maybe we'll open up for conversation in a bit, which is, when we consider past mistakes, do you feel that you're harder on yourself than you are on others? or vice versa? Do you feel that you are hypercritical of others, or are you more critical of yourself? And how does that arise for you? When does that arise? I know for me, it often arises in zazen. I'm going to talk about how we contend with it. What are the different ways of contending with it skillfully? And I also, you know, I've been thinking about this, I've just been really noticing how very often it's the people who are exhibiting some behavior, you know, that we found annoying, like you're remembering it and you're having sort of this imaginary conversation. I hope I'm not the only one who does this. Like an imaginary argument with someone in the past, present, or future, about something that was just annoying that they did, or even maybe more than annoying, offensive. But is it, when we think of it that way, is it a mirror of ourself? Is it really something that we're seeing in ourselves that we object to? And I think that the ability to kind of look at ourselves and kind of turn that around, the desire to do that is the mark of someone who's interested in being on the path. So what I'm also interested in is, you know, where is that line? Is there a line between not dwelling, but also, and also taking responsibility for the results of your unskillful action, if you can identify results of it? How can we create wisdom from ignorance if we make the same repeated mistakes, which, you know, might be part of the human condition, according to some. And some might even, you know, I was trying to remember what someone had defined, like the definition of insanity is making the same mistake over and over again, and expecting a different result, right? So, but we do that, you know, big and small. So I guess the extent to which we dwell on our own past mistakes speaks to how loud or prominent our inner critic is, versus dwelling on others' mistakes. Sort of, we have this serving as judge and jury aspect to our personalities. So this all encompasses, in a way, like all of the precepts in terms of our notions of morality and ethics, how we evaluate, you know, like really perseverating, I guess, on an episode in which you lied. So you broke a precept, or stole something, you know, as a child, or stole something less, not tangible, but maybe stole time. Or if you're worried about the harmful karma generated by having misused sexuality in the past, or engaged in something that might be construed as intentional killing, you know, whether it was eating something or having to euthanize a pet, which is a terrible thing to have to go through, you know, and can lead to all kinds of, you know, moral conundrums, I guess. So this precept really does speak to how we think about our own thoughts and how we come to terms with our own past, without, as the precept itself says, dwelling too much on it, because I think that is how you can really do, you can undo things you've learned since then. I find that anyway. But you know, during Zazen, thoughts of my own past mistakes. And again, I hope I'm not alone in this. You know, we're told, well, you're going to have thoughts. They're going to happen. And we're not engaging with them. We're not, you know, telling a story to ourselves or having a narrative going on, but the thoughts happen, they go by, and oftentimes the thoughts are painful. So for me, those thoughts about my own past mistakes kind of combine with a tendency to be anxious about the near future. So in a certain way, that feels like, am I worried that I'm going to be making the same mistake later today? Or sometime in the future. And, you know, so there you have it. It's like that's my signal, if I'm paying attention, to kind of come back to the present moment in order to maybe, I don't know, reduce the problems associated with both of dwelling on the past, but also residing in the future. But, you know, every time I recite the Gatha of Atonement, I am struck by it every single time, and I think it's useful in this way. But I have questions about it too. I wonder, does the repeated recitation help prevent repetition of past mistakes? Especially mistakes like caused by greed, anger, and ignorance. If you can identify specific things in your past that were caused by greed, anger, and ignorance, which I guess that's, you know, by definition, probably most of them were caused by that. One of the three of those, or combination. And, you know, each of us has different associations when we atone or, you know, fully avow. You might be feeling stuck on a specific event that happened years ago. You might be replaying a conversation or an argument in which you spoke unskillfully, or you're expressing anger and not being terribly, I don't know, thoughtful about the timing of the conversation in terms of what the other person is going through. You know, you were just sort of having to put your own agenda out there. It was like really weighing on you, and you weren't thinking necessarily about how it would land with the other person or people. So yeah, the timing of the conversation might have been unskillful, and that's also how the other person might interpret your comments, that, you know, it might be like deeply wounding to them, but you sort of intended it as constructive. Or maybe you did intend to wound them, and it was just a moment of anger. And I know that I dwell on mistakes I made specifically, and I'm going to talk more about this, that I made repeatedly in past relationships. That's really the area that I have the most concern about. If I'm thinking about the times in which I have trouble with this precept and that I am dwelling, it mostly is about past relationships that I feel were unsuccessful, and therefore they don't exist anymore. But, you know, maybe hindsight is kind of 20/20 from where I sit at this time, which is, you know, by the way, for me, it's a very heady kind of time of heading into being an empty nester. My younger son's going to college in the fall. My older son moved out about 6 months ago. So that does kind of, if you've been in that phase, it does bring up a whole new sense of past, present, future. And, you know, that you're entering into a new new and exciting, but also sad. It's very, I don't know what to feel, to be honest with you. I have no idea what to feel about this, but I'm in that moment of like being proud and being happy and being also sad and all of the things at once, but it does bring up a lot. Parenting is just so fraught with with ego and with confusion and am I doing the right thing at any given moment? And so to be entering into a new phase where they won't be in front of me all the time is really bringing up a lot of memories, both good and bad. And I'm sitting here and thinking about how things I perceive as mistakes were in relationships, not just in parenting, but in the past, were absolutely caused by greed, ignorance, delusion, and anger, frustration, craving, wanting what I couldn't have. It would be hard to rank them, which was most prominent. They're all there. And so whenever I'm thinking about, all harmful karma ever committed by me since of old, on account of my beginning was greed, anger, and ignorance. And that word beginning was always like stops me. I just don't even know what to make of that all the time. Born of my body, mouth, and thought, now I atone for it all. So I thought when I'm thinking about that, I'm really applying that specifically. And I want to hear from you all what comes up for you when we're reciting that or anytime. What comes up for you when you think about dwelling on past mistakes, what you might have done differently, more skillfully if you had it to do again. But I was just going to use a few examples of things that I perceive as past mistakes from my life that I've tended to dwell on, and how they relate to my practice what I view as the deepening of my practice over the past few years, which was accompanied or preceded by a need to try to live by vow, to bring some structure to it. I received Jukai nearly 2 years ago, and that was really, a motivating factor for abiding by the precepts and living by vow. And also being like deeply flawed and imperfect at the same time and accepting that. But just generally a mark of like trying to be a better human today than yesterday and going forward. So number one, I just wanted to start with anger. Dwelling on past mistakes that I perceive as having been caused by anger or inflamed by anger. So recently, it was brought to my attention by my ex-husband, the father of my children. We do get along very well. And also my older son has said the same thing, that I have exhibited anger in unskillful ways in the past. And that was really, really hard to bear because I wasn't even really aware of it, that I was being perceived as an angry person. But it was a useful realization and I can more clearly see it now. But my first instinct was to reject it. No, I've never been an angry person. I'm like a peace loving person. I seek serenity. I like quiet. But clearly within the context of certain interpersonal relationships, that's not been the case. And my older son and I have had a long history of difficulty in communication because of personality differences, because of, I don't know what, we had a hard time connecting for a long time. And it's getting a little bit better, but it's painful to consider the ramifications of that in terms of our relationship now that he's 19 and living on his own for the most part. How did this all affect him? How does it continue to? And I find it hard to find a place where I don't dwell on that because I take parenting so seriously. We all do. It's just something that you invest so much time and energy and ego, honestly, into. I mean, it becomes everything for a long time. So I've been thinking a lot about how anger was there, but I just wasn't seeing it or wasn't owning it. And then the second one is greed or craving. how did I make mistakes based on greed? So I always think, you know, I'm always struck by how suffering is craving or craving is suffering. And if that's so, then I suffered a great deal in the past, because I remember times, like as a child, as a teenager, as a student, as a younger adult, that I was always wanting something different. And I made mistakes because of that, where I would be kind of impulsive, or wanting things. And when I think about it, it's sort of foreign to my current life, because I live extremely simply now, and I don't really want anything other than like all beings to be free. I don't really want any material stuff. I can't think of anything that I want. And I am happy about that. But I used to be quite the opposite. I used to really, I think, wreak havoc on the people around me, you know, with wanting things, wanting to live in a different place or live in a different way. Not quite being content with where I was at any given moment. And it really took a long time to get there. And so, you know, here I am, 54 years old, and I'm looking at how long it took to get to that place of like, where as I'm not content about, certainly not content about what's going on in the world around me and environmental issues and so forth, I do feel content in terms of what my life looks and feels like. It doesn't want or need anything. But I think in the past, you know, I wanted to move. I wanted to do something different. And I think I probably caused some chaos in the past because of that. So that's one. And then, you know, ignorance is a hard concept. Also, I think it would really be one of the more devastating insults I could receive, you know, would be called ignorant or stupid or, but I think about the word ignorant, like what is it that I have ignored, intentionally, or like, what have I been intentionally, or what have I been unwise about, in order to maintain my worldview? Have I done things or acted in certain ways that kind of allowed me to stay in a bubble? You know, what mistakes have I made that were due to ignorance, and how can I consider this going forward? Yeah, and again, so all of this is very present for me in this period of transition. It really does bring up a lot of these thoughts, and it also, like, to move the conversation toward like the idea of atonement, you know, we atone or a vow for harmful karma. We own it as Buddhists. But what we don't do, as in other religions, my friends who are Catholic, I was very, very fascinated by confession. When I was young, I was fascinated by nuns also, by the way, obsessed with nuns. I just always wanted to read books about nuns. But no, I was fascinated by the fact that my friends would go to confession, and that they would leave there with like a few tasks, you know, count this or say this, say the rosary this many times, and they would then be absolved of what it was they came to confess. And I was always really like interested, is that how that works? Is just merely, you know, saying that you atone for something enough to account for your action? I was raised a secular Jewish household, in a secular Jewish household, not religious at all. But if I ever did go to synagogue, it was on Yom Kippur, which is the you know, Day of Atonement. It's considered the high holiday. And, you know, it's where you're sort of asked to consider what you've done in the past year. hard for kids who don't, you know, read or speak Hebrew. But, you know, it's the same thing as how can you just do that? Can it be accomplished? And so, you know, we don't pray really for forgiveness in that same way and have it and expect it to be granted. We're really calling on ourselves to avow, to fully avow. And that's a process for me. You know, I think about some of the things I've read over the years, and I'm always compelled by the ancestors, you know, having compassion on us, and the practices that we engage in, like together as a sangha, or alone if we're reading, or of course when we're sitting zazen, that to help us to kind of see the obstacle of suffering, that see it as an obstacle, and yeah, you know, I think in a certain way, I catch myself during zazen reciting, reciting the Gatha of Atonement in my head, even though that's probably a boo-boo, but it does happen. And I just, you know, I want to be contrite, but I don't want to be dwelling. So I'm just, you know, I keep wondering where that line is, and I'll be curious to see if anybody else has ideas about that. So, you know, again, to err is human, right? But why do we make the same mistakes over and over again? You know, does it come down to psychology, brain chemistry, karma, you know, all of those things? And I don't know. You know, there's so many different, there's such a huge kind of spectrum between the size of the mistakes that we make, between, you know, buying something, you know, you didn't like it last time, but you bought it again, just thinking that you would like it this time, through unskillfully starting or entering into a relationship or exiting a relationship. And those are the things that really concern me from my past. And because specifically, I think about the ways that my actions might have been hurtful to not just the two of us in the relationship, but to families and friends and whoever else. So I was listening also to Domia's episode of the Zen Studies podcast. It's 167, about how we can practice with mistakes. So we can possibly make fewer of them, but so that we're not, I think she said, paralyzed by the fear of making mistakes. Because I do think I live in sort of fear of making mistakes, and that's part of my anxiety. And, you know, also, you know, before I turn it to all of you, I just wanted to say, like, to me, maybe where the line is, Domio said this in the podcast too, is intention. You know, we make mistakes being careless all the time, probably. I know I do. But it's the mistakes that we make with intention that bear study, and analysis, and, you know, it's effort. It's really effort. And if we don't have that intention to kind of look at it, are we letting chaos in? Are we giving up on our practice? You know, it's really, we're on this path, and it's not that we're not going to look back in order to move forward, we are, but we're not going to get stuck there. So anyway, so that's my talk, but I would love to hear from all of you in the cloud and the dirt, your ideas about, especially maybe about that line, you know, where do you think that is for you? And are there specific themes that come up for you or times when these themes come up for you? About past mistakes. Thanks, everyone. Jim, are you going to talk first?
Well, I could wait for Leah because Leah's hand was up when I got here. Oh,
okay. All right. So Leah, you want to go first?
Oh, okay. Hello. I have a little story and it's got a prop. So that's what I was getting when I got up because I needed to get the prop. So when I first came here last year, I was terrified of everything. So I was a new person and I didn't know what to do. And I still kind of feel like that. I'm always, you know, there's this, I've explored the thought. I've looked at the thought. It's still there. Maybe it'll go away someday of just, you know, a lot of concern and anxiety about what if I make a mistake? What if I do something wrong? I'm guaranteed to make a mistake. I'm guaranteed to do something wrong. I'm terribly anxious about this. And I came anyway. And I repeated myself and somehow made it to come again and then another time. Always just a stew of anxious thoughts about making mistakes. So I was hanging up my coat, I believe, in the main room, and there are plants there. And one of the plants came crashing down as I was hanging at my coat. There's a shelf above and this plant was hanging over. And as I did it, I must have hit it just enough and it had like its weight was leaning over. And so it took that time to just go crash and break on the floor and just everywhere. And I love plants and I hate hurting things. And I was just absolutely mortified because it's like made a big noise and crashed everywhere. And it wasn't my fault. But the level to which I beat myself up over it was, I really had to sit with it. I really had to look at it. And this is what this place in Zazen helps me do. One of the things it helps me do is to sit and just go, I am beating myself up a lot. And it's not doing me any good. And I think that the cruelty I show to myself is the same as the cruelty I could show to anyone else. Like I have to sort of hold them both in the same container and look at them. Well, of course I wouldn't, you know, do that to someone else doing that to me. So anyway, this is a mistake. And I went into the main room after, and whoever was taking care of the plants there at the moment, I apologize if you're here and I don't remember who you are, you can just say, I did it. Anyway, was taking care of the plants and she was just calmly, you know, putting everything together and she put everything back and I helped too. I finally got unstunned and helped her too. And I was like helping to clean up the stuff. And then later I came in and took a cutting because she had cuttings available of that plant that had broken and come into very, well, it created clones of itself and I took it home. And I have been growing it ever since. And so this, I know it doesn't look like much, but when I got it, it was like, you know, kind of up to here. And so it's got all these new leaves. Look at that. How wonderful. So anyway, very blunt metaphor, but it's helped me to sit and go, you know what? These mistakes are not that bad. They are the worst when you use them as a club to beat yourself up with. It is not useful. So.
That's a great metaphor for growth from mistakes. Nice, mm-hmm. Leah.
You'll wave bye.
Bye. And just to say, there's so many different ways of looking at an event. That plant had to go, you know. it was so overgrown, and so I thank you, Leah. And think of all the people who are happier now because they have a little piece of that plant that they took home.
I think the fact that it is so illogical for me to have felt like it was even a mistake is part of the lesson.
Well, I just wanted, I'm just so moved to say so many things, and I'm going to forget almost all of them. I try to keep three things in my head. But first of all, I wanted to say, Ellen, thank you so much for everything you shared. As a child, I was raised Methodist, and I was fascinated by Judaism. And I read a lot of books by Jewish authors. I read everything by Isaac Bashevis Singer. And there's another one whose name I can't remember, but I've read all of his books too. And I just thought it was a fascinating community and a way to live and a way to look at the world. The thing with me is, as some of you know from my way-seeking mind talk a couple of years back now, I come from a 12-step tradition into this community. And in that practice, we look at our mistakes like all the time, like all the time. And we say what we did wrong, and then we confess that to someone. Confess is possibly too strong a word, but we talk to another person about it. And then we, if it's necessary, we make our apology about that thing. And out of that, I have come to be grateful for my past mistakes, because they are what brought me here. And through my Buddhist practice, I have learned to become very comfortable with myself, more so than ever I was before. And so I just lost my train of thought. And I think that has to do with sort of a grateful attitude toward my past. And the precept is telling us, don't dwell. It's one thing to remember. It's another thing to dwell on it. The other thing about, and you said two other things that were very important. When I am frustrated or annoyed by another person. And so if there are possibly two of us, Ellen, you and me, who do this, and that is if I'm frustrated and annoyed by another person and I think about it long enough, the question I've learned to ask myself in my Buddhist practice is why? Why does this bother me? And the answer is right there, and it is because I see myself in that person. I used to do whatever they're doing, or maybe I still do it. And so that is an area that I have to learn to accept. And it sort of puts a crimp in your style in terms of, you know, wanting to mentally dwell on someone else, you know, because if I do that, sooner or later, I'm going to get to the point where, oh my God, I'm just like that. So that's a little circular thing that I get into. You know, there's anger, and we just talked about that. greed, nothing is coming to my mind at the moment, but I'm sure it's there in my life. Oh, well, I do think of something in the way in the past that I'm ready to make amends for, and I don't know where this person is. But ignorance to me is simply not knowing. And I have I'm born and raised in the South. My father was born and comes from a long line of Methodist ministers from Georgia. And I have been through awakening to whiteness twice. I went through it once as a cohort, and then I did it again as a leader of it. And it was even after that, going through that twice, that I began to realize the racist crap I was fed. And it was so subliminal. I was not conscious of it. I was not aware of it. And so when I think of the Gata of Atonement, that's where it's useful for me. And I'm saying all of that is beginningless. From my father, from my grandparents, from their grandparents, believe it or not, I have a great grandfather who fought in the Civil War. It stops here. So for me, the Gata of Atonement is the buck stops here. And there's a reason why we do it every Sunday. And if we're in a session for 3, 4, 5 days, we do it every morning. There's a reason why we do that. It's because we have to keep remembering. And we have to keep saying, okay, as of this point in time, I'm going to go forward and be better than that. And golly, there's so many other things I can say. I think I've taken up way too much time. But thank you so much for this very rich, thought-provoking talk.
Thank you. I love that the buck stops here in terms of like that inherited, you know, racism or what, anything that comes from ignorance that gets handed down. I love that the buck stops here. That's good. Is that Ruth Ann with the hand raised? Must be.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Alan, for the talk. This precept from my very first experience with the precepts. This one jumped out at me. The action of dwelling, the integrity in that. I mean, Shakespeare said, know thyself. And coming from history of being expected to go to confession, luckily for me, I think I was in early high school, this priest in the confessional said, what you're facing now will come around again. So be grateful that you're looking at what you can work with as you grow, or, you know, this is yours to re-examine. And I thought, bingo, I learned something needing to come here all the time. So I think the gestalt of our culture is moms aren't going to be perfect. I mean, I think it was Nancy Friday, you know. Moms can't do everything right. So dwelling is, to me, accepting the Buddha nature, that I have this opportunity, even though it seems like it's a slog looking at the end of the day or at 3 a.m. of, oh, I could have handled that better. I didn't need to say that. Or I hope that person who's no longer here forgives me. And after I forgive myself. So thank you for being brave and sharing with us, because the Sangha is about the strength in this community practice. Thank you.
So, sorry, I couldn't figure out how to work my phone. I had my hand raised, but I couldn't figure out how to unmute it. But I started a job semi recently and have been making tons of mistakes and dwelling on them like crazy. And that just kind of made me think about something that I did to sort of separate myself from what's just making me have a bad time and sour my mind versus what's actually going to help me not make mistakes in the future. And at work, I just started making a list. I'm just going to write down every time I make a mistake, I'm just going to write down what that is. And then I have this running list. And then every time I add one, I read through the other ones so I don't make the same mistakes twice. And, part of what allowed me to do that was separating myself and, acknowledging that I'm not my mistakes, that I may make the mistakes, but that doesn't mean anything about who I am and what, what I am trying to do. And then that just kind of gave me an idea about because there's also other mistakes that I have with relationships and things like that, that I also dwell on. And I just kind of had an aha moment where I'm I should probably be journaling about that every time I have something that I'm just a scenario where I said something the wrong way 10 years ago to somebody, and I should probably be writing this stuff down and kind of getting it out of my head and separating myself from it. But then also trying to mindfully learn or skillfully learn from it instead of just dwelling on it. But that's kind of what I was thinking. It's just taking a tactical pause and then also journaling.
Andrew, you have your hand up.
Hello. First of all, Ellen, thank you. That was a great talk. I didn't realize how relevant this precept would be. And you're definitely not the only person that plays out conversations in their head. It's kind of my natural wandering mind state. But what I really kind of want to say is, when I think about looking back at past mistakes, there's really just a tendency for me to kind of dig up all of this regret that I've felt about big things that have happened. I won't get too into detail, but I have to remind myself that a lot of those things that I view as mistakes were really only mistakes in the aftermath, really. Sometimes we make decisions that don't pan out. But in the moment, kind of going back to that idea of intent, in the moment, was I making a mistake or was I making a decision based on everything that I had available to me? There's certain things that, didn't work out in life that I can look back on and go, yeah, but I went for that as best as I could and in the best mindset that I could, and it just didn't work out for all kinds of reasons. Some of those reasons were actual mistakes. And I think a lot of true mistakes are more momentary, how we react, how we say things, how we treat people when we're in a mood. So that's really what I try to do, is I try to kind of look back and reflect on something that I'm feeling regret about and go, okay, well, hold on. Was pursuing that path really the mistake I made? Or was it just kind of the small things afterward, maybe certain things I did that turned it into a mistake? Or was it just something that wasn't going to work out because of, X, Y, Z you know, influences. That's kind of all I have to say.
Is it Aralyn? How do you pronounce your name? I haven't met you.
Aralyn.
Aralyn. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Aralyn.
Yeah. Okay. Kind of scary moment. I'm finally just like saying, hey, I have things. This, of all the precepts, I feel the most called out by. Most of them, you know, don't kill, don't steal. I'm like, oh yeah, that's easy. Don't dwell on past mistakes. Ooh. Because I have obsessive compulsive disorder, post-traumatic stress. I have lived in the, if I make mistakes, people could like reject me, give up on me. That fear has defined most of my life. So this is a challenge for me. Because I always thought I was protecting myself by like dissecting and picking apart every mistake I ever made so I could never make that mistake again. That was exhausting. And I think like getting involved with Brightway is helping me to go, hey, show myself the compassion and patience that I extend to everyone who's not me. But even this is a very full, I'm not really sure the word I'm looking for. Fortuitous, I guess, that this is the week I came back to. The last couple of weeks, there have been things coming up, and it was very easy for me to go, oh, you know, no one's going to judge me if I miss this session, this other stuff. And then I realized that it was fear, because I am so accustomed to living in the past and dwelling on mistakes. And Zen and Shikantaza and everything calls me into the present. And that scared me so much to divert from my pattern of living in the past. And everyone else's talk seems so much better put together and informative, and mine just seems like rambling.
Thank you, Aralyn. Did I get that right, Aralyn?
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. Veronica?
Thanks, Ellen. I really enjoyed hearing you talk. My kids are 19 and 16, and I'm 50, and so I felt like I was listening to myself sometimes. I was super interested to hear this talk tonight because I dwell on past mistakes of myself and of others, both 50-50, barely. And the thing that you said the most that really stuck to me, and I think this is true for me, is that the dwelling comes from a fear of repeating the mistakes. Because I feel I'm able to forgive myself or let go of things if I truly believe I'm not going to do that again, then I can kind of let it go. But the things that I don't trust myself about are the things that I dwell on. And like for me, indulging in anger in a particular situation is something that I struggle with. And so I've been avoiding the situation as a way to not indulge in the anger. It's just, well, then I just won't see you. But the problem is that's causing a lot of dwelling because I don't have the knowledge that I won't make the mistake. So I think I need to think about that. And a better growth would be to somehow just not indulge in the anger, to find a way past that rather than avoiding it and dwelling on it. So anyway, this is really good food for thought. And I really appreciated the discussion.
Thank you.
I guess, you know, that part in the commentary where it says, create wisdom from ignorance. And as people are saying, like, well, how do you do that if you don't dwell, you know, if you don't analyze, if you don't try to figure it out or beat yourself up about it or whatever. And I guess just for me, if I feel like this is like, we trust that ignorance will be created if we keep practicing. So for me, it feels like this works because it is taking place within the context of practice. It's taking place within the context of that karma verse and Shikantaza and the teachings and mindfulness and Sangha and all of that stuff. So like if we keep practicing, we don't have to worry about it. But we don't push it out of our minds either, right? It's not just like, it's not like we go to confession and then the slate's wiped clean and we never, like we're open to these arisings, right? Of like the memories or the feelings or something. But I feel like if we are totally mindful and we have worked on ourselves, then in that moment, we will do the best we can. You know, like we will have been informed by those past mistakes and we'll get wiser. We'll get a little bit better. My thoughts. Anything you want to wrap up, Ellen?
Yeah, thanks everybody. I always love hearing everybody's takes and perspectives on these precepts. That's like really the key for me. But yeah, that's Domio, that's where I kind of, where is that line of, you know, if we're not dwelling, how are we learning? And it's a balance. And I guess that's the answer, is that you stay in your practice as much as possible and have a little faith that you're learning things along the way. And, you know, for me also, it's about teaching my, I was thinking this in the middle of my talk, you know, what am I passing to my kids in terms of these lessons too? And what am I transmitting to them? So that's on my mind. But yeah, it's a biggie.
And there's also the piece of, if we know that any mistake that we have made or we will make is going to be a source of great misery and torture because we're going to beat ourselves up with it, like we actually, like, we'll try to close ourselves off from, you know, making a mistake or actually being with the results to actually feel the sadness. That's where the karma verse comes in too, right? Of like, God, oh man, that sucked, you know? And I feel like that's what teaches us, right? That's what changes us, is because we notice we didn't like making that mistake. The intentional ones anyway. Do you want to do the closing verse, Ellen? We dedicate the merit of this Sangha meeting.
Are you ready? We dedicate the merit of the Sangha meeting to all beings so that they may discover the way. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita.
Ellen, that was wonderful.